This episode of The Tour Life is also brought to you by Optimize Touring. If you're interested in learning how you can bring health and wellness on tour with you, whether it's a small van tour or a huge arena tour, go to optimizetouring.com to learn more. Welcome to The Tour Life podcast from Well Better Best. I'm Janine, your host, integrative nutrition health coach and personal trainer. In the past 10 years, I've had the privilege of meeting some of the most interesting and hardworking professionals in the music industry. Whether you are a fan of live music or someone who actually puts on the shows, you'll find some great stories, advice, and encouragement to live a happier, healthier life doing what you love. Today's guest is a tour manager, production manager, and tour accountant who has worked with artists such as Snoop Dogg, Toni Braxton, Orianthe, Miss Lauryn Hill, Chromeo, The Ataris, Simple Plan, and Matchbox 20, among many others. In this episode, we discuss the state of touring going into fall 2021, how touring has changed over the years, and the importance of being financially responsible in this industry. You can find him on Instagram at ponyboy_productions. Here is my conversation with Joseph Ferriella. Joseph, it is so nice to have you on the show. We got a chance to get to know each other a little bit, so I'm excited to dig in deeper. How are you?
I'm good. Not too bad. You know, living life and, you know, keeping it positive as possibly can. You?
Yeah, same. We actually were just talking about how I'm going to be going to Riot Fest with my son. This will be the first show of, you know, definitely, I mean, because he went to shows with me when he was younger, but like as a 13-year-old, like for music that he wants to see. So I'm so excited.
That's great. That's great that he actually likes to go and see shows. You know, there are kids at 13 that they're like, no, I'm going to just hang out in my house. And I think it's very important for kids to actually go out and do stuff and not sit in front of a TV screen playing video games all day long.
Which is what he mostly does on his downtime. So hopefully this will help him, you know, get out a little bit, picking him up early from school. So he's going to be happy about that. So tell me, how has it been going? I know right now we're recording in mid-September and things are starting to get a little different. So how are you feeling? And then, you know, we'll get into a little bit more, but how are you feeling? How's that going?
I'm feeling okay. With what's going on, everything in the world right now is so chaotic and crazy. There are shows that are coming back. There is a lot of shows that are canceling. You know, different agents that I talk with and stuff. I'm like, how's it going? What are you guys booking right now? Is anything coming up and, you know, that we can work on? Like, you know, it's crazy because it's like, we book out a month of shows and then 4 or 5 days later, we're getting the call that the shows are canceling and it's not happening now due to protocols. And, you know, they had a 2-month tour that was booked over in Europe and, you know, and they're like, yeah, this is going to be great. This is going to be a good source of income to come in. And then, you know, they start planning for everything. And then a week later, it's just like, nope, it's not going to happen. You know, the venues aren't going to be allowing it and this and that, blah, blah, blah. And the tour goes away. And now that we're coming into the winter months and, you know, things are continuously changing. And where do we see our industry going right now? It's really kind of unknown. You know, there's the artists that are out there going out and trying to do the best that they can, and they get out there and they do a bunch of shows, and then there's shows that are canceling. You know, and there's some, it varies from state to state and country to country, and you know, that's just really what's going on right now. And you know, I know it's definitely it's troublesome to, you know, our industry and pretty much everybody who works in the industry, the people that are working right now are extremely lucky to be working, you know, whereas there is a tremendous amount of us that are not working still. We've maybe had a couple of shows here and there without the year, but outside of that, when you're still trying to, look for other stuff that's available or where you're needed, and it's not there, and you're sending out 2,000 emails and you get back maybe five with maybe an auto response or, nothing's really going on at the, moment type of email. And you're kind of like, okay, well, let's talk in the near future. Hope everything's well. But out of 2,000 emails, when you only see five come back, you go, whoa, that's not normal. You know, that's really not normal. That's kind of like, what happened? Where is everybody? So, seeing all that stuff going on right now, you just kind of go, okay, well, don't lose your mind and focus on other things. There's many other ways to, have an income source. And not only that, but, instead of worrying about it, because let's be honest, right now in our world, there's a lot of worry and there's being a lot of worry put out there, and you got to not focus on that because, you're going to stress yourself out, and that's not good. You don't want to do that. You don't want to stress yourself out. It's like, okay, I know that's what's being said. This is what's out there, what's happening. I'm going to go to the gym, or I'm going to go outside and, do gardening, or I'm going to go take a walk with my dog, or I'm going to go work on my car, or, I'm going to find something else to keep myself occupied while trying not to pay attention to the negative and more focus on the positive and enjoy my life or enjoy your life, because we only have a certain amount of time in this world, and, make it your best, have the greatest time ever that you possibly can. Even, there's always a flip side to a negative. So you always want to try and take that negative and flip it into a positive. So that's where I've kind of been in life as far as my head goes, my headspace. And, I look back on lately what I've been doing. I've gone through a lot of my archives and going back to 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago. I'm like, wow, I forgot about these videos. I forgot about these photos, I've been tossing them out there on social media, and people have been getting getting a kick out of them. They laugh at them. I get responses like, this is incredible, So yeah, that's how I've been with everything.
We talk about this a lot, at least, lately. It's that whole taking inventory of your experiences, because, in your career, you kind of get, and in life in general, you kind of get into the swing of things and you're just going, 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 and you forget to really cherish and be grateful for the things that you've been able to experience. So it's an interesting place to be in, right?
Absolutely. We've touched on this when we previously spoke. Living on the road, our way of life is a lot different than your general public living life. We're always on the go. We're always traveling. We're always in a different city, a different state, a different country. And it's a gift. It's a gift not many people get to experience, or it's a lifestyle that not many choose to have, but some that wish that they could. And then some get out there and they do it and they're like, this is not for me. Whereas others are like, let's go to do another one. Let's do another one. It just keeps going. And then it becomes an addiction. It really does. It becomes an addiction of, oh, I just want to go do a show right now. And as soon as, it's kind of like nerd talk, geeky talk, where it's just like, oh, we're talking about this show. Oh, what kind of area system do you have? What kind of PA are you flying? Oh, what are those lights? Oh, this. And then you start getting into all the fundamentals of, stage productions. Whereas over time, it's just kind of like, oh, yeah, okay, you got Clay Packy Sharpies up there. Okay, cool. You know, oh, you're running that back, you know, you're running that guitar amp, a Mesa Boogie, you know, dual rectifier. Oh, cool. You start to kind of get like, it's not that it's not exciting. The excitement conversation just kind of tones down into the knowledgeable conversation, you know, where you have so much knowledge about it and you talked about it so much. It's just like a normal conversation, as if you were going to go to your family's house and, you know, sit down and have dinner and you have a normal conversation, you know, or you're with friends, the general public, you know, just friends at home where you're having a normal conversation. But it's different for our industry, you know, and the friends and like family that we make on the road, you know, they're important to you. And when you come home from the road, there's a lot of times you can't relate. You can't relate to others that are not in that world. So when you're traveling and you end up where it's just like, yeah, okay, I'm on a world tour. I have days off here, 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 and here. And you want to not just sit in your room and just kind of like, okay, I'm drained from doing shows. You want to get out of that headspace and try and focus on other things outside of your work zone, right? So you want to go out and do sightseeing and go see different places, or, you know, monuments or museums or this or that. And, you know, keep yourself in a better headspace, because we all know being away from your loved ones, and, you know, especially if you have pets and a wife and children, or brothers, sisters, mom and dads, and aunts and uncles, it can be taxing on being away for so long, you know. And, you know, you have to kind of adapt. And when the work level gets extremely stressful, you got to try and find a way to, you know, decompress, whether that's not sleeping all day and going out and partying and drinking all day, but I'm going to go for a walk through a park that I've never been through before. Here, there's some cool things to look at there, you know, stuff to that nature.
The life of a roadie, or anyone, even anyone who just travels a lot for a living, is definitely very complex and different. And there has to be a lot of effort that you put into just doing the normal things, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the beginning of when you started your career. There are some patterns as to how people get into the industry. You know, like you just started helping somebody load out, whatever, you know, stuff like that. Or you had a friend who you started helping out randomly and then it just snowballed. Did you always know that this was a career path that you could take? And how did you end up turning it into a career?
Well, it's an interesting story. There's kind of like, there's two parts to it. So at a very young age, I want to say I was probably 5, maybe 6 years old, somewhere around there. I was at a concert. And I was with my sister, and what I saw on stage, I was like, wow, I want to do that, right? That's what I thought at a very young age. Just like any little kids, I want to be a superhero. I want to be Spider-Man. I want to do that. Whatever that was, I wanted to do that, right? And that was, you know, looking at the production and seeing everything that was going on. Move forward to I started listening, you know, I listened to music throughout my entire life. I have family that I learned about later on in my, you know, into my career, that I had family in the business since the 50s and 60s. I had no idea. I found out through my aunt. So 15 years old, 16, 15, 16 years old. My father was in a car club, and it was actually called Still Cruising Car Club. They were from Eastern Long Island, and there was a member that joined the club, and the club called him Inky. And Inky was also known in the New York hardcore scene and in the punk rock world as Bob Eats. And he was the singer of a punk rock New York City hardcore group called Black Train Jack. And he was a phenomenal singer. He was a trained singer. And he joined my dad's car club. And my dad introduced me to him one day and at a car show. And he looks at me when my dad introduced us and he goes, "Hey, kid, you ever want to get into the music industry?" And my father just kind of gave him a look like, "What?" Like, you know, my father didn't want me going in that direction. And I was just like, I thought about it, you know, I did think about it. And I remember from, you know, being a kid. Move forward to months later, the phone rings. Bob Eats, or Inky, he calls my father and he asks if he can talk to me for a minute. And my dad was like, yeah, what's going on? He's like, I have an opportunity for him if he's interested. Like, okay. So, I get on the phone with him and he goes, "Hey, so, an opportunity just came out from New York City, with a record label called Royalty Records. And, you know, there's an internship at Royalty Records in New York City. Would that be something you'd want to get involved in? You know, is that something you'd want to do?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm down to do that." Now, mind you, you know, there was local bands around the Long Island area, and this was back in the end of 95, beginning of 96. And I was kind of like, "Yeah, I'm down." So Richie, the drummer, had the connection. Rob called me, and then Rob, Richie, and I talked about it, and then Richie put my name in Royalty. And they were like, "Yeah, you know, he starts on whatever day it was." And I had to go from Eastern Long Island to New York City by train. And I was in there 5 days a week, you know, back and forth. I'd go in there, you know, early morning until afternoon. It was around the summertime. And that's what I ended up doing. I was there for about, I don't know, 6 to 8 months, roughly, somewhere around there. And then I ended up going on the road. And that's where it all began for me. Like, between backline and production, and that's where it all started for me. Next thing you know, I was out on the road. I was gone for like, I don't know, roughly 3 years, 3.5 years straight, roughly. It was a whole new album cycle with the artist. And then right after we finished that album cycle, we turned around, we were in a van and trailer, and we ended up driving across country to go record the next record out in Los Angeles at West Beach Studios, which is no longer, but West Beach Studios was known for all the Epitaph bands back in the day. They did all the recordings there, and we did a record with Danelle Cameron. I don't even know if he's still producing anymore, but I mean, he, you know, he recorded a lot of the greats: Bad Religion, Propaganda, NOFX, anybody who was really on Epitaph Records at that time. He was pretty much responsible for all those recordings. So it was kind of cool to actually go into that studio, and in the back there was a like a vault with a lock on it, and it was open one day, and we look in, and we're like, "Wow, check out all it was all, you know, all reel to reel." It was all the whole library was back there, the whole Epitaph library. We walked in there and we're walking through and looking at all the different titles. We're like, "Yeah, that's a great record. That was done here." So that's where it really all kind of started for me. And then that next record came out, and that was nonstop touring. That's when touring was like 15 to 18 months or longer, you know, in my lifespan, you know. And then, you know, it continued on. And then you started to see where the industry started to not go that whole 18 months or longer. It got shorter and shorter. Then, you know, it was less months of touring. You saw it just kind of dwindle down to maybe, you know, 9 months or 8 months. And then it started to get more spread out, you know. So, but yeah, that was heavy touring back then. And that's where I started, you know, And from there, I was with that that group for 6 years, the first 6 years, and then I ended up going overseas with an artist, and I was on a run with them for just that run, and I ran into friends that I knew from previous years on the road. And I had a day off in London, and I went down to the Astoria, which is another venue that's no longer. And I went in, and they were sound checking. They're like, "What are you doing here?" And I was telling them, "Oh, I'm in town, been out on the road with these guys." They're like, "Why don't you come out and work with us? We have a new album cycle that's getting ready to kick off." And I was like, "Let's talk about it." So they're like, "Come out, you know." So I went out to the show that night and sat down with everybody. They gave me the whole rundown of what the scheduling was. And that's where I started. You know, basically, I had a lot of hats to wear at that time, from backline to production managing. I was their guy for everything. Everything that had to be done, you know, they came to me for, pretty much. And we went on. I went on with them for, let's see, it was the end of 2002, so 2003, 2004, into 2005. So about 3 years I was with them on that. And mind you, I ended up, it was wild, in the middle of that record cycle, I got a phone call from the singer asking me to come and play guitar with them. But I'm like, I'm production managing, and I'm dealing with, you know, everything else that I have to deal with. Well, you can still do that too if you want. Okay. So, you know, wearing a lot of hats, but I had fun doing it. And then from there, it just moved on to other acts, you know, different artists from there on out. And the genres started to change and open up. You know, it was alternative. It was punk rock, alternative, you know, into pop, into hip hop, into R&B and rap and electronic music. I mean, country. I worked with one country artist. So that was pretty wild. So I've got to work in multiple genres of music, and it's been phenomenal.
That's so cool. Like, the great part too is that, you know, somebody was like, "Hey, check out this cool, like, interesting job. You willing to try?" And you're like, "Yeah, sure. I'll go into the city, like, whatever." But you know what I found really interesting? Is you mentioned how touring used to be 15, 16 months, right? So you're talking like almost a year and a half of touring.
Yeah.
What observations did you make about the industry as you started to see these changes happening?
You know, it's hard to kind of, not hard to wrap my head around, but from a psychological standpoint, you know, paying attention to how everything has decreased over, you know, over the last 25 years of being in the business, touring wise, you know, you saw it happening. Like it was in plain sight. How can I explain this? So I think it really kind of came down to where, when you started to really see, you know, the routing coming in from the agencies, you know, where shows were being broken down instead of having five in a row with one day off a week, and then you start another five in a row. You know, once you started to see that change, and it was like more of, okay, you got three shows in a row. And then you got 2 days, you know, 2 days travel days, because it's like the routing completely changed over time. I think that's where it kind of came down to. I think there was probably more of a variety at that moment in time over the years, because as more and more groups evolved in the business, you know, trying to lock in, you know, all those acts within a 7 day period, you know, and the scheduling goes, everybody's scheduling is completely different. And I think we're kind of seeing that similar now, where, you know, you have all these holds on venues, and, you know, you have between 15 to 30 to 40 holds on a venue. And it's just trying to see how the routing will work out. Or it's a lot, don't get me wrong, it's a lot different now because of what we're going through in the world. But, you know, like back then, it was just like book, you know, Monday through Friday or Monday through Saturday, you know, and the distancing was shorter from city to city versus where the routing would be. Okay, you have a show in Seattle, you know, tonight, but, you know, you're going to have to get down to Arizona by, you know, a show tomorrow. That's not going to happen, you know. Due to rules and regulations with, you know, bus travel and drivers only being able to drive for a certain amount of hours. Whereas back then it was kind of like, if you were in a van and trailer, you know, there was times you would be rolling up as, you know, if there was, you were playing a venue and sometimes, okay, well, doors are in an hour from now and you're pulling up an hour before doors, you know, not all artists, but some of the routing was just so crazy in that sense back then, where, you know, that came in with the smaller groups. It didn't matter if you were an hour before doors. Once mass production, you know, once your productions got bigger and bigger, it started to change the landscape of touring in that sense, if that makes sense. You know, I think it also came down to, you know, like I said, the availability of artists. It came down to, you know, scheduling and what venues were able to really do it at that time, or they were able to have that group at that time, or the deal didn't work out. But you see it nowadays where, and I, you know, I've seen it where it's like you'll get a show, okay, you're in San Francisco, and then you have 2 days off to, you know, travel and get to Austin, Texas. You know, what happened? Where's the show? You know, where's the show in Los Angeles? Where's the show in San Diego? Where's the show in Arizona or Vegas? You know, prior, why didn't we fill something in that area? Why is there 2 days off? You know what I mean? So that's where it's really kind of changed over the years. And, you know, you see where you have less shows in a week than you do back then, where there was a lot more shows in a week.
When would you say touring became like a big part of the industry?
I mean, I think touring has always been a big part of the industry because, you know, when you had cassette tapes and then you had CDs, you know, there was artists that were out there, they were touring. But they, you know, I'm not really quite sure how much touring there was as far as heavy duty touring, like nonstop. You started to see a lot of heavy touring from my age group, you know, from my time in touring, you started to see a lot of touring really start happening. In the mid 90s, like, you know, mid 90s, you started to see a lot. You know, I think really, I could be wrong and people will turn around and go, oh, you're wrong. But I don't know, from my perspective, I think that, you know, that second Woodstock that happened, that just kind of opened up. You want to talk about floodgates? I mean, that opened up, from my, you know, my perspective, that opened up a tremendous amount of doors for festivals. And there was festivals going on overseas too, but a lot of those artists you just saw just climb. And then you just started seeing so many artists getting signed and booked and, you know, tours going out, and it started to progress and just kept on going and going. Next thing you know, it's like by the early 2000s, MTV was just like alternative rock. And then you had Headbangers Ball, you know, you had that, the hair metal portion, and you had alternative rock, and then pop came in. Pop's been around for years and, you know, decades, but, you know, the pop world was there. And then you had you had stuff like on MTV, TRL, you know, all the kids were watching TRL, and then, you know, it changed. Everything just continued. And then you had Much Music, and then Much Music Canada. That was another thing. And that started to progress into, you know, into other genres of music. But then you had, like I said, more and more and more, just kept on signing and signing and signing. And the touring just, you know, got larger, you know.
That's what it sounds like. It sounds like it was kind of, you know, you hit like a tipping point where everybody was touring, and then it was just about doing the shows, doing as much as you possibly can, like not thinking about anything other than just like being on the road and bringing in, you know, the ticket sales and like getting the work and just getting the publicity and like, you know, reaching to the fans and whatever. But it was like, it sounded like it was just going so fast. And it was just growing so quickly.
Right. But I also feel that that also kind of came in as technology grew, you know, because a lot of stuff was done by fax machine. It was done by writing and paper and typewriters and all that jazz, you know, whereas the technology world has and different, you know, softwares and that have been developed over time and, you know, in the last decade, and you just kind of go, wow, this has made things so much easier. We could cram so much more in, you know, instead of I'm tired, my fingers hurt from, you know, writing this out or typing this out on a typewriter, you know? So I think, you know, the technology world actually definitely changed that, you know, that landscape as well and made things a lot more fluent, but it also made things a lot more chaotic.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, something that I find interesting too, is that, you know, the bus drivers and like what they fight for when it comes to like labor rights and things like that affects everything directly. And I mean, that's the difference between like touring in the US versus touring in Europe. It's interesting how something that directly impacts the industry ends up having like a way, way, way more like deep impact long term, because it kind of sets the waves in motion for, you know, having a travel day as opposed to having a bunch of shows all in a row. And that's kind of something that we're looking at now, but from the touring side, as opposed to like, you know, the transportation side. It's more like the people within tours are realizing too, you know, sometimes the routing is shit and like, we need to also care about how we're taking care of people. So it's like the motivation is coming from a different side now. And now things are being broken up a little bit more. Like I was looking at some tours for next year and I noticed like there was rarely two shows in a row. And if that happened, it was because it was in the same venue. And that is something that I didn't really see a ton prior to COVID. So I find that super interesting. Do you have any insight on that?
I think with what has gone on in the world, you know, we're seeing those changes, and the perspective of it is, you know, I think it'll change in certain at some point in time. I don't see it changing, you know, next week or the week after, but over time we may be able to come somewhere up into that level of water and, you know, be able to have a smooth, you know, smooth sailing week of, you know, whether it's four shows a week with 3 days off, you know, five shows a week with 2 days off. Right now, just with everything that's going on, and the proper measures and the proper safety protocols, you know, everybody's trying to do their best to stay and do things the most safest way possible. And I think at the moment in time, that's all we can really do, you know?
Well, it's interesting because right now, you know, the stuff that's happening in the fall and it's really kind of like you get in where you can fit in, right? Because there's only so much and there's so many different hurdles that everybody has to go through. But you know, when people are planning ahead and they are planning, you know, 2022, 2023, it sounds like there's a little bit more care put into the routing and, you know, whether that came from you know, the burnout that everybody, you know, had to reckon with or not, you know, I guess we'll see.
I think it also comes into play of, you know, people figure it like a game of poker, right? People are trying to hold their cards close, you know, close to their chest and trying to play their cards right. Because if they don't play the cards right, it could be a total massive failure. And people who are booking 2022, 2023, and I've heard people are already booking into 2024. And the thing is with where we are in the world right now, it's smart to do that. Because the thing is, if you're taking holds out on 22, 23, and 24 already, right? You don't know where 22 is going to go just yet. We just don't know, you know? I mean, we could turn around January 5th of 2022 and we could hear, you know, the most greatest news in the world of everything is over with, we're back to our normal, and the world goes on. And everybody who's, you know, booked up for 2022 is like, let's go, we're ready, let's do it. And then you're going to really start seeing booking. Yeah, okay, we got the whole week open, let's go. And it's going to continue and go like, whoa, wait a minute, what just happened? Like, we just went from having, you know, a show, day off, show, day off, or a show, 2 days off, show, to, wait a minute, we got four in a row now? You know, or we got two in a row with a day off, two in a row and a day off, and then one? You know, it's just kind of, we don't know where it's going to play out to. So to actually plan that far ahead right now, I think it's smart. It is smart. I mean, is it tiring because of you planning out that far in advance and everything can get canceled, you know, or you find out you book it and then you get close to that date and then you find out, nope, it's not happening because ticket sales aren't good, or nope, the city's, you know, the state changed their mind, or the city has changed their protocols and no, we can't do this. No, we can't do that. It could be, you can have a sold out show and all of a sudden that city or, you know, city state turns around and goes, protocols have changed, this and that, blah, 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 blah. And then next thing you know, we got to cancel the show. Why? Because we have to redo all of this stuff. All this has to be redone and we don't have this in order. So I think, you know, people trying to plan as fastly as possible ahead for any of those changes that do come in, you know, we can't, the only thing we can really do is try and stay as far up to date as possible, you know, with what we are hearing. Unless we're sitting next to one of those officials, you know, or we're sitting on their shoulder everywhere they go, and then, you know, playing the game of telephone. Oh, I just heard this. Pass it on, pass it on, pass it on, you know, and then the whole industry knows. And then trying to get ahead, you know, while trying to not fall behind.
Yeah. And so I was at a music festival last weekend with the Rohde Clinic. Like, I was at the Donda listening party in Chicago as well. And so it was like interesting seeing how like security, for example, was like bare minimum. Because one, we have like a labor shortage happening. And two, you have a lot of people who basically just weren't counting on touring for the rest of the year, so, or like doing anything related to music, right? So they found something else to do. We're seeing this weird thing where like shows are happening, but they're kind of pared down to the bare minimum in a lot of ways. And it, you know, it's just, it's a really weird place. Like I remember in May, that was the so I like, during the pandemic, like I got vaccinated and then in May I went to Vegas and LA. And when I was in LA, I went to Clippers game and they were still at like super low capacity and everybody had to wear masks, you know, stuff like that. Everybody had to show a vaccination card. But like, that's another thing, right? Because you're watching this event happen under completely different circumstances than normal. And that's also, that's kind of what's happening in the music industry now. It's like there's certain regulations that vary, you know, from place to place, but people are trying to put on the best show they can. They're trying to complete as many shows as they can until somebody inevitably gets COVID or something and they have to, you know, shut it down for a couple of weeks.
And then red flags come out as soon as something, as soon as somebody, there's the people that are out there just waiting to hear, so somebody got COVID on this whole thing, red flags are up. Next thing you know, it's all over the news everywhere, you know? And there's people, they are trying, you know, they're watching. As everybody says, everybody's watching. It's true.
Yeah, and it's a difficult place to be, right? I mean,
well, yeah, the whole industry is walking on eggshells. I mean, there are events that you see no promotion for, and you're like, wait, what? That's happening? They're doing a show in this city, or this is happening here. You never see any promotion. You don't hear any promotion. You nothing. Everything is so kind of trying to be as hush hush as possible, or they're reschedules, from, you know, events that were happening last year, you know, or all the shows that are happening last year that are able to happen, they don't have to promote it anymore. Those people who have those tickets are able to still go. But, you know, anything that's not rescheduled that's happening now, you're not seeing much on that. It's kind of hush hush. But going into, like you said, as far as security and everything being almost kind of like bare minimum and, you know, just trying to get by, everybody is, you know, there's that, all that money that was made from ticket sales and everything last year, and the shows that are happening that are reschedules for this year, you know, from last year, you know, they're trying to be careful, trying to be cautious with the money. I get it, you know. It's there's that saying on the road, you know, it's like, okay, I need to make a certain amount of money, and, you know, that's going to, you may be able to relate to this as well, but everybody who's in the touring world, you work, you know, let's say from February through to October, November, and then, you know, normally mid-November, December, January, and February is a lot of downtime. You know, or you have one-offs, you're flying in for this, radio shows, Christmas holiday shows, stuff like that, but not everybody's doing it. So it's like, you know, that's kind of like your quote unquote nest egg. I need my nest egg to be able to get me through these winter months because everything's really slowing down. And I think that's right now what everybody's trying to do is trying to secure their nest egg, because we're coming up into those winter months again right now. And the people who have been out there doing shows, you know, and these mini tours that are happening right now, they're trying to make as much as they can and pay their bills. And try. Hopefully, you would hope that, you know, they're being responsible and wise and going, okay, I have October, November, December, January, February coming up, and I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if I'm going to have anything for work in that time frame. I need to put this money away, you know, for mortgage, rent, bills, food, take care of my family. You know, everybody knows the holidays. Everybody's buying gifts, buying food for Thanksgiving. I mean, let's put it this way. Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. Three of the most expensive holidays out of the year, right? Especially if you have kids. You got tons of kids. It's like, you got to give them the best Christmas ever, you know, whatever you celebrate, you know. Thanksgiving, last year, you were what? They stated everybody could have 5 people in their homes. What? It's never been like that. Normally, it's the whole family getting together. There could be 15, 20 people, you know. Are we going to see a difference this year? I think so. I hope so. It'd be great. You know, it'd be great to see the whole family and sit around and go, wow, so how's your past 2 years been, you know? But to go back to, yeah, the nest egg is very important, you know?
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. When did you figure out in your career that you had to actually put forth effort into planning and kind of, you know, having a safety net for those times when you weren't going to be able to tour? Because I think that's something that, you know, the people who weren't quite there yet, you know, weren't like hadn't really had the opportunity to think about it, like this made them do it. So I feel like everyone's kind of general idea of touring today is that, you know, it is feast or famine and there has to be planning involved and you have to take it seriously and it is a business.
Absolutely. So I don't know. For me, I've always tried to stay as responsible as possible when it came to money. My Uncle Joe, at a very young age, told me, and I come from an Irish-Italian family, by the way. My Uncle Joe would tell me, his saying was, keep your Goombas in your pocket. That's what he would say. You could go out and you see something you really want, really think about if you really need it. If you don't, keep your Goombas in your pocket. Your Goombas was your money. And I always, you know, kept that in my head. And, you know, it's like I came from, you know, my family wasn't a rich family, but we weren't a poor family. You know, we lived in a upper middle class neighborhood is where I grew up. And it was a nice neighborhood. It was a developing neighborhood. When we went there, there wasn't much of where I lived. It was really kind of built up over the years. So where I kind of got the, you know, over the years of touring and making money, I started working from a very young age from, you know, carnivals. I just had this conversation not too long ago, but one day I was just kind of like, I went to a carnival company called Allied Amusements. They were based in Long Island, and I wanted to build the Gravitron. So I was at the carnival in my town, and I went up to the guy and I said to him, I said, I want to build that and tear it, you know, set it up and tear it down. And he was kind of like, really? I'm like, yeah, I think it'd be fun. He's like, all right, come here on Sunday night. And this is, oh, you know, during summertime as well. Come here Sunday night and, you know, I'll give you a job. That job, I want to say I was 13, 14 years old. And what 13, 14 year old do you know that makes $1,500 a week?
Not mine. He cost me that much.
But, no. But I would go, I ended up starting off setting it up and tearing it down and learning everything about the Gravitron. And then I was there at first, I was the kid outside grabbing tickets for the Gravitron. Yeah, you know, get on the Gravitron. And then it turned into running it, sitting in the middle. I was like, yeah, I'm the spaceman. You know, it was fun. I think that's really kind of where I started as far as, you know, making money as far as that went. And then the winter time, my father bought a snowblower and go out and make money with it. I'd go down the block, charge $20 for a driveway to snowblow a driveway at 14. So I learned how to make money at a very young age. And then moving on in our industry, I just kept on always putting my money away. And then in 2007, my dad was retiring and my mom was a housewife. You know, she was a house mom of three, and they were retiring and they wanted to travel. So my dad basically bought a full size tour bus, and him and my mom, they got in there with their dogs, and my mom had a bird, and they traveled. That's what they wanted to do. And I took over the house. I took over my parents' house, and it was mine. And I was living it up. You know, I had my house and I had, you know, I had land and everything, and I was doing everything I wanted and traveling and making money. And then I think I got a little irresponsible and I spent a little too much money back in around 2009. And that's where we went into the recession. And when we went into the recession, I was trying to find work. I couldn't find any. And I started struggling. struggling, fell behind on my bills. And it was rough. It was extremely rough. And I just took the work as it came and what I could get. And I was still trying to keep up on the bills, and it was rough. And then it ended up where 2012, I got the whole year was completely booked. I got fully booked out for the entire year. And I was like, this is great. I'm going to start putting money back in the bank. I caught up on, I started catching up on my bills. And then we get hit with Hurricane Irene. And then we get hit with Hurricane Sandy. And all the money I was saving starts going out the window. So I was kind of like, we had to short sell the house. That was it. Like, lost the house. And I think from that point on, that's where I said to myself, I will never, ever let myself get into that situation ever again. And from there, I just started socking my money away, just putting it away, paying it, paying attention, to every penny, everything. Where I turned around and I've actually broken it out now. And, I can honestly say I was irresponsible for myself, but I was responsible for my clients. So if I was dealing with their tour accounting, I made sure that was perfect, but I didn't. And that's an issue with, self-care. That's an issue with self-care. And I learned that where I was just like, if I'm going to care for my clients, I need to care how I care for my clients for myself. Otherwise, if I'm not there and I can't do it for myself, how am I supposed to do it for them? I basically, what I was doing is giving my all to my clientele, and I was degrading myself by not looking after number one, as Billy Crystal would say, with Curly from City Slickers. It was, when you find out what this one thing is, well, what's that one thing? You'll know it when you know it, And I always, that's something else. I take stuff like that and I hold on to that stuff. That stuff is like pure gold to me, But that was where I turned around, and it was, it was from 2013, 2014. It was just nonstop. Any money that came in, made sure I paid my bills. If I had to double pay it, so I got rid of the interest. And it was great. I was like, yeah, this is perfect. Okay. Finally, when the bill was done, I would literally sit there and write on. I got rid of all my credit cards. I have no credit cards anymore. No credit card debt. It's gone. And I'd finish off that last bill and I'd write fully paid. Yay. Right across it. And, put it in with my files. And it's gone. And I closed that account because I didn't want it anymore. That was it. It was fully paid off, done for. And I just keep socking my money away. And I got to myself to the point where I don't need credit cards. And, I'm able to, I have multiple bank accounts that I have everything broken out for. And, there's one account that just focuses on my bills. This is what I need every single month for my bills. This is my other account. This is play money. This is my savings. This is another account over here that's meant, I have a budget, to do repairs. I've broken it all out into different categories and given myself budgets. And if the money's not there, I can't do it at the time, And it's comfortable that way. I've made it. Now where I figured out for myself, and I took my, how I do everything for my clientele, and I applied it to myself. And now that I applied it to myself, I'm like, man, it feels good. It feels really good. And yeah, that's where I'm at with that.
Yeah. And that's huge. I mean, and people have a really hard time talking honestly about their finances. And I mean, I think we all do. We have issues until we really take a look at them and try to figure them out. But I think it's incredibly valuable to be able to listen to how things can work out. And I mean, and you're going to get hit multiple times. You're going to get hit as many times as you need to get hit until you learn the lesson.
Oh, absolutely. But there's times where you're just like, thank you. Can I have another?
Yeah.
Like, oh God, not again. You're like, you did it to yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of like what you know, your parents would say to you, I told you before, you just don't listen. You're too thick in the head.
You gotta keep your Goombas in your pocket.
Keep your Goombas in your pocket. Yep. best advice my Uncle Joe ever gave me.
Oh, I love it so much. And yeah, I mean, it really is like, it's self-care. And the thing is like the anxiety that you get from like, you know, having to take care of something that you really don't want to take care of is not worth it. I mean, eventually you learn that, you know, as much as it might cause you anxiety and it almost hurts to just like, you know, take care of it, it's always worth it. And you can always breathe easier in the end, because really what you're doing is you're taking care of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, this years ago, like when the recession hit, my friend Chris and my friend Steve, they had told me, I've been wanting to get into the stock market. I wanted to get into the stock market back then. They're like, you don't want to get in right now. Everything's just way too high. Wait. And I talked to other friends about it, and they're like, you know, things are this and that, you know. And then when everything plummeted for our whole industry last year, I reached out to my friend Chris and, you know, and my friend Steven, and I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Everything's canceling around us. Like, you know, and I was going to go out, and there was still a tour that was on that I got the phone call for and said, I have something for you. Okay, great. Yeah, I'll take it. You know, I was at that point, I was just like, yeah, I'll take it, because all the festivals that I was working on were going away. So I brought up to them, I'm like, is now a good time to get into the stock market? They said, yes. Now's a good time.
When there's blood in the streets, right?
Pretty much. They said, you know, everything is down. And if you can, you know, you don't need a lot. And I got lucky. I'm not, you know, and I have a group on Facebook that's just meant for just the stock market stuff, you know, and I have about 200 people in there, and it's people within our industry. It's only for people in our industry. That's what it's meant for. And people who wanted to learn. And I'm not the smartest one in the stock market, but we have this tons of different knowledge from different people, right? That are in there. They're in the stock market as well. There's short sellers, there's long-term, there's, you know, dividend holders, all this stuff. So learning from each other and pulling bits and pieces from everybody, and you learn your way with that. I started with $25. I put $25 in, and in a couple of months, I was just doing day trading. I took the 25, it went up a couple of bits, and sold whatever I did. I kept on doing it. And I had so many people say to me, yeah, but you're going to pay the, you know, the highest tax bracket. I'm like, on $25? I mean, come on. So there was a stock that I made like 1500 bucks. I built it up, that bank up to around 1500 bucks. And I was reading online, I'm trying to find, you know, something that's trending. And I was using Google Trends to see what was trending in the stock market to figure out like what has a good rating and what has good news on it. Who's trending. And I found this stock and I was like, I took a chance. I could have lost all of it. And I dumped $1,300 into just one stock. And I was like, this thing's trending at 100%. I'm like, here goes nothing. And I rolled the dice as if you were in Vegas. And what was it, 48 hours or 72 hours later, this thing just takes off. And I look and I'm like, what's going on right now? And I look and it was like $4.26 per share that I bought it at. And it was somewhere it was somewhere over like 126, $136 a share. And I wound up making just off of that, like $32,000. I think it was like 32 grand. I was like, what? So that was like mind blowing just in that sense, you know, where I was just like, and I sold it. And that was a big safety net for me, you know. That's where I was just kind of like, that was just another way of, you know, trying to figure out other sources of income, because when everything shut down, I turned around to drive for Uber, and Uber pumped the brakes on everybody as well. Nope, you can't do that. Wait, what about Uber Eats? Nope, you can't do that either. Like anywhere you tried to go to try and pull in an income, just to try and keep yourself busy, make money. Like I was thinking about that nest egg. That's what I was thinking about. How long is this going to last? And looking into it, people are like, oh, this is only going to last, you know, 2 weeks. I turned around and I was like, when I heard what was going on and what was out there, I'm like, there's no way this is lasting 2 weeks. We're looking at this. We're shut down for the year. I knew it. I knew it from then on. From that point on, I'm like, we're shut down for the year. I know it. Guaranteed, you know.
Wow. Like that's really awesome. And I think it's a good lesson, right? Like, you know, so one of the biggest takeaways, definitely keep your Goombas in your pocket. Also diversify, learn, take that time, that downtime, and actually like learn how to manage your money and how to make more money with your money. Right. Is there,
that too. Yeah.
Is there anything else that has helped you, you know, when it comes to like taking care of yourself physically and mentally? We only have like a couple minutes left. So if there's anything you want to share, that would be great.
Well, I'm an interesting individual, and I'll tell you why, because self-motivation comes very different to different people. Right. For me during the pandemic, I put on at least, I don't know, I put on about 50 pounds, and, I got to the point where I was just like, I can't sit around and do nothing anymore, because we were cooped up in the house. Everybody was cooped up, can't do anything. And, you know, I found myself, you know, motivating myself and keep myself in a positive headspace. I took apart everything in my house. I was like, what does this do? What does this do? Rebuilt my computer. I took the TV apart. How does this work? You know, took that apart, took the stereo system apart and did all of that stuff. And I pretty much took every single appliance and electronic in my house completely apart and put it back together. But I've been like that since I was a kid. Then just recently I rebuilt the engine in my car, and that was a pretty wild experience. And yeah. So that, and then going to the gym, trying to stay in the, go to the gym and spend 2 hours a day in the gym now that, you know, the gym's been open. You know, I always try and, you know, try to stay smiling and not a fake smile or hiding. You know, I try to stay in something that's going to make me laugh or make other people laugh, you know, that I may find funny. And I've had people like on social media, I have put some quick stories out on like Insta story and Facebook storyline where I insulted myself while I was in the gym, but it was meant in a sense of like comedic relief, right? As if, okay, yeah, I'm pushing myself. You ever watch like those movies or you see those commercials where it's like you have the trainer that's really kind of pushing you and they're insulting you to, you know, work harder, work harder. Well, I was doing it in an Italian way. When it came down to, I was thinking about like, I was thinking about cannolis, and it was just like, you know, whatever I said in the video. And some people were just like, you're insulting yourself. Other people were laughing at it. I'm like, yes, please just laugh with me. Like, I'm not insulting myself. Like, I'm very comfortable in my own skin. It's, I'm doing it, you know, because, you know, it's kind of like a funny comedy skit, because I'm mixing the Italian with the, you know, with the workout situation. And we all know that you can't eat cannolis and have, you know, super sod while going to the gym or eating mozzarella, you know? So it's stuff to that sense. And I got, you know, there was a lot of people who got a real kick out of it. So back to the health portion of everything, you know, keep yourself busy, take care of yourself. You know, you want to have a drink or two? Yeah, have a drink or two. There's no reason to go get sloshed, you know? We've been under enough stress. Don't put your body under any more stress. You know, alcohol's not helping you. It's not. It's, you know, a couple gives you a nice little numbness, buzz, whatever. That should be good enough. I don't think we're partying like it's 1999 anymore. You know?
It is not Woodstock 99, you guys. No. Relax.
No, we're not. It's like, you know, it's like, it's not, it's, we're not there anymore. We're at a different way of life. And, you know, your self-care means more now than it ever did in the past. And I say that not as like you didn't matter back in the past, but you had, the world has had their party years, you know, and you wanted to have a good time. You wanted to go out there and let loose, and it's still okay to let loose. It still is. But, pulling
up. Take it easy.
Yeah. Pulling a Frank the Tank, running through the streets naked. That's not working anymore.
We used to call one of our friends in high school Frank the Tank. So that's hilarious.
Did he run the streets naked?
I probably, honestly, I don't know. It was my son's dad's, like, all their little group of friends. They did some ridiculous things, but
well, they were fun. Those are the fun times.
Right. Right. And then, you know, let's take it down a notch. Let's keep those goombas in the pocket.
Right. But now it's a great memory that you can look back on and go, wow, that was funny.
Right. Yeah. Joseph. This was a great conversation, and honestly, I could talk to you forever. So hopefully I'll see you around soon.
Yeah, hopefully.
But yeah, have an amazing day. It was really great talking to you, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, and stay safe. Have a great time at Riot Fest, and that the name of that group to go check out is Beach Bunny.
Beach Bunny, yeah.
I'm going to go online and check out Beach Bunny and see what they're all about. Have a great time. Stay safe. Enjoy your weekend.
Here are some key takeaways from my conversation with Joseph Ferriella. 1. With the continuing uncertainty of the pandemic, it's really important to appreciate the good times. Take some time to take inventory of all the things you have accomplished when you're feeling down. 2. Be sure to think ahead and save for down times and for the future. It's necessary to really pay attention to your own earnings and not just your clients. As Uncle Joe says, you gotta keep your Goombas in your pocket. 3. Learn from your past mistakes. Every situation you're faced with is a learning opportunity, so embrace it. 4. Ask around and find out how others have been able to diversify their assets in order to get ahead. It never hurts to ask, and it could save you a lot of headaches in the future. And 5. Success starts with self-care. You have to look after number one first, and that's you. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tour Life podcast. Be sure to give Joseph a follow on Instagram at ponyboy_productions. And don't forget to like, subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, and to follow the Tour Life on Instagram at the Tour Life podcast.